Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the High Hopes Podcast. High Hopes. On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP. This crowd was singing high hopes, smiling through a broken nose. Oh, high hopes, high hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Yo. Sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly. Shout out to Miller Lite. Because of Miller Lite, we got to be at Garage Rittenhouse last night with a bunch of awesome High Hopes listeners. And Jack, like, two games of the season in a row, like battling games of the season. I mean, the Jason Stark is on one right now with all the stats about these games. I mean, I'm sure you've seen him. It was like a 0.5% chance to win when Trey was down to his last strike two nights ago. 2.5% to win last night when Schwarber was down to his last strike. The first team in 15 years to win back-to-back games when they're down to their last strike. Only three times in the 2000s it's happened. Like, there are so many of these stats and crazy things. And look, we know a bad start. They've been really good since. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. But, like, this is why we commit to watching 160, 158, 156, whatever the listeners of this pod do. Like, we are sickos, as Jack says. And the reason you do it every night, you get, like, five or eight or four or three of these a year. We got two in a row, Jack. We got two in a row of, like, the reason you tune in every, like, the playoffs are going to happen, but the reason we always say enjoy the regular season, enjoy this that you get, is for freaking nights like the last two nights, man. That was so awesome.
Well, yeah, and it was one of those things where you're sitting there and you're like 9-19, starting to have some moments, all of a sudden, 4.5 back from the Braves.
It's unbelievable.
They're going to win the division.
They probably
They're
are.
Gonna win the
they
division.
Probably are.
They're going to win the division. They are locked in, and now the good part of these last two games, is it starts to have that trickle-down belief in the clubhouse of, hey, we're not out of it yet. We're not done yet. We've come back. We remember the 2 days in Washington where we came back and down to our last strikes and did the thing. But, man, the moments that some of these guys are having, the toothpick hill,
oh,
I love them so
buddy.
Much.
It's unbelievable. It's such like it feels like he should be from, like, the 50s with the toothpick. It's great.
Awesome. It's awesome. So he's flying around the bases. By the way, we are starting to get some just all-time Fransky calls.
Dude, unbelievable. The last two nights, he has – like the team did in the ninth inning, Francie has elevated. He left his body last night. It was unbelievable.
He did. And, yes, we were celebrating with everyone at Garage Rittenhouse. I got to be honest. I feel like there's a lot of doubt in the building.
Right here, you know.
And it was crazy because it was one of those things where I got, even before it happened, and, you know, some people tweeted it out, you did have some weird feeling that Derek Hill was going to do something. I don't know why, but there was just that kind of feeling around the ballpark. And then all of a sudden, he shoots one to right field. It keeps going and going and going. And it was gone. And obviously, we all exploded. I'm sure everyone else was freaking out. And, yeah, this team is starting to rack up some memorable games. And and ones that could kind of propel you, even though they've been propelled, but can really set you on a run.
Yeah, and I'm of a lot. There are like I generally agree with the momentum is only good as the next day's starting pitcher. I do think that is a thing in baseball, but to your point, Jack, I think that these are the kind of wins that can help a team in the crucible of October if you're fighting for a playoff spot in September. Because to your point, I do think there is something to that contagious feeling of we're not out of it yet. You went Doug Peterson. We're not done yet. Like, I do think there's something contagious with that.
First off, I guess it was Doug.
The most recent Philly sports, we're not done yet. I think Doug is the one that you think.
I think Malcolm's was more impactful than maybe.
It probably was. I think you just hear Doug's part, but you're probably right. I mean, Malcolm's the we all we got, we all we need, I think was the rallying cry. I agree. But I it sticks out. But I do think that there's something to that. Like, especially when we've talked about this a lot, you know, that it's 162 games. It's a long season. It's a grind on the fans, on the players, on all that. But, like, having these moments, these experiences are things that you can lean on in the playoffs because you're never kind of out of it. You never believe you're out of it. And one other thing that I think is super, super important, they need guys like Derek Hill to do stuff. Like, we know any championship team, like, it's not just about the stars. And the six guys who are all-star level, and hopefully they all make it, they probably won't all make it, but they all have real cases to make it. They've been great. Have really propelled this team. Like, the reason they carried them early in May when they were turning around, and other players have stepped up, but they have been the core of why this team's been great. But you don't win a World Series without the contributions from guys like Derek Hill coming through in moments. I mean, think about last year. The freaking Dodgers, the behemoth Dodgers, who hit the most important home run of the baseball season last year, Jack? Miguel Rojas, right? Like, that always happens. And that has to happen in the playoffs, obviously. But, like, it's such a good sign that they're getting those type of contributions because you have to have those to win.
Yeah, and a part of me is also happy that I'm happy that Marsh had a moment. I'm happy that Stott had a moment, because I think if you look and you look at the everyone in that clubhouse, if they said, yeah, Schwarber had a big home run, or Harp had a big home run, or even Trey, you know, God forbid, had a big moment for this team.
I mean, look, you did get the hit two nights ago. It was super important. Listen, you know, he got a little single. It was an important single.
It was going off at -500, a slider away he was swinging at. So he did beat the odds on that one. But, like, Marsh having a moment, hopefully that kind of – I do trust him a lot.
Me too.
In big spots. I feel like in big spots he's been really, really solid this year. But we know he hasn't had the big postseason moment. I mean, the home run off of Charlie Morton was great. That was in the JT inside the park game.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he had the big homer in the
seven. Didn't he homer in the 7-0 game too?
Well, he homered in the Astros game.
Yeah, I thought so.
But the other big moment for him was the 23 game 3 down in Arizona when he hit the big double.
Is it game 3 or game 4? Yeah, yeah.
But it's really been it. You know, I mean,
and he's had some big bad moments the other way. Obviously, the strikeout in that game 5, massive. And last season, what was he like, 0-for-5 in that big game? Like, he's had some bad spots too.
So hopefully, that home run kind of propels him to, I can do this, and I've arrived. Because then there's probably a part of Marsh that sees him, as of today, being a starter in the All-Star game.
Yeah,
that is saying to himself, "Is this real?"
Yeah, like imposter syndrome, right? Like, that's a thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Do I have to pinch myself? And hopefully that home run, and after the pep talk from Bryce the other day, like, maybe this is him settling and, like, I'm actually a good player. Like, I'm actually a good to great player that belongs in a way. And Stott's had plenty of postseason moments. It's funny. We all just, like, trust Stott in big moments because he's had them. I mean, he had the triple against the Braves. He had the triple against the Mets. He had the grand slam. He's had enough moments where you trust him. So I don't really have a fear of him being afraid in a big spot. But certainly Marsh, I think he needed that kind of moment, hopefully to help solidify, hey, I belong.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating because I think, you know, look, and Stott's been better. You know, I love he's above 400 with the slugging now. That's exciting. And, you know, the numbers are creeping up. Him and Bohm, the numbers are creeping up. They've been good, you know, and Bohm's been very good for a month plus, whatever. But I think the March thing, Jack, to your point, is so fascinating because I do think that, look, he has earned being an all-star this year without a doubt. And he has earned, I think, right now in this moment for us to trust him. I really do. When he comes to the plate, I feel good about him. And, you know, it does go back to May of last year, and we know all those numbers. But it is fascinating because he's having, I mean, you know, I think it's hard to say that Schwarber with his 29 homers and a 260 almost or 250 average or whatever isn't a 970 OPS or whatever it is, isn't the best hitter on this team. But you could argue it's been Marsh. Like, you could argue that with the 320 average and the 11 homers or whatever is on pace. Like, if Marsh is going to hit 315 with 22 homers and good counting stats, I mean, that's like that's an insanely good season. So, it's fascinating because, Jack, to your point, like, he has to do it in the playoffs. We've seen these struggles. And because he's taken this real leap where he was a nice hitter last year, he has become one of the better hitters in the National League this year. It's one of those things where the numbers, there are numbers to support it, and we trust him. But I think a lot of us are like, is not waiting for the other shoe to drop, but like, is the shoe going to drop, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely watch him that way, which is unfair to Brandon because he's been so good. But when he goes through a mini slump, I'm like, oh no,
here comes the
regression. But it also just might be who he is now.
Yeah.
And we keep talking about the big three with the Phillies.
Yeah, he's the third now.
He's the third.
No doubt. I mean, no doubt.
He's the third. Now, I think the nice thing that is developing with this ball club right now is, I thought Turner's last two games where he's just shooting the ball the opposite way, that's what Trey did all of last year whenever he was going through slumps, and it helped him stabilize and hit 304. So the way I'm kind of viewing Trey, I don't know if we said this last podcast or not, but the way that I'm kind of viewing Trey is like, I don't think he's a 227 hitter. There's going to be a hot streak in here somewhere, and hopefully it stabilizes to like 265, whatever. But maybe he is starting to climb his way out of it. But Trey's whatever. You know, Schwarber, by the way, monster walk last night.
Dude, we should 10 pitch at bat. Like, that was a real, a big time at bat. And we all thought he was, like, going to hit a homer and tie it, and the walk ended up being just as important.
Yeah, I mean, a 10 pitch at bat, I'm sure it wore down the pitcher and, you know, set up Derek Hill for that. But being able to, by the way, Donnie Baseball pulling the right string again, saving him for that spot.
And using, like, shout out to Donnie, because that was aggressive. He used three players in two at bats. He used the Schwarber pinch hitter, Stubbs pinch runner, Hall pinch hitter. I mean, that's commitment. That's aggressive managing, and it worked.
That's National League Baseball is what it is, kid. That's National League Baseball.
Old school National League. That's how you end up with Garrett Stubbs at third if you go to extras. But, you know, we live with these things.
Oh, that's called baseball. That's baseball. And the night before, you know, he was aggressive in pulling Bohm from the game so that Stubbs went in there. And it did end up where his spot came up, and Derek Hill again had a big hit. So yes, I think Donnie Baseball deserves some credit for being aggressive from that standpoint. But yeah, Schwarber, a massive 10 pitch at bat there. But my overall point, Schwarber's been really, I mean, he's been great. Harper's been good to great. Has not had a good last two games, but
Harper's been really, really good. I would say March and Schwarber have been great, and Harper has been like one notch below great.
Sure. So, but the nice thing that's starting to develop with this team is that, you know, Stott's been really good in June. He's hitting over 300 in June, probably 310 now, if I had to guess. He's 305 heading into yesterday. He doesn't have to be great. Like, if Stott can just hit 259 with a 735 OPS, I'll take that. I mean,
In a second, dude. I would take that in a second.
So he's been solid this month. Bohm has been solid since the reset. So that's at least like six guys that you feel solid about. Crawford, I don't know if you've noticed, but I think he's made some little swing changes and is, I think, trying to get more under the baseball and not, you know, hit so many ground balls. And then like JT's just JT. I don't really freak out about JT at the plate. I care about what he does behind the dish. And at the plate, like if he pops a home run every once in a while, great. But yeah, I think at least with the first six, and then it heads into the trade deadline of if you get the right bat in there, all of a sudden, this lineup that we have loathed for most of the season, it's pretty deep if guys just stabilize and do their jobs. And if Marsh is a real guy, and when the Trey Turner hot streak comes, like there's a making of a damn solid offense if they go and get the right fielder for this thing.
I really agree with you, and I was about to push back if you said damn good, but damn solid is the right way to put it. And with this staff now, again, like I think, you know, we talked a lot about starting pitching in the back end of it. I think, like, clearly, and maybe they get a starting pitcher who can go to the bullpen, or a starting pitcher is going to start and they move Lazard to the pen or whatever. But I think pretty clearly as this is shaping up, like, the right-handed bat matters. But I think there's an argument the bullpen piece matters just as much, you know, and we're still a month away from the deadline, and we'll get into that. But, you know, when you think about how this team is constructed and if they're going to win in October, how they're going to do it, or the most likely way they're going to do it, it's by, you know, some of these bats being hot at the right time. That's just part of what the sport is now, and we've seen it in 2022. So you need some of these guys who are important to be hot and to play at that level, but you just need some small contributions, some key hits from those guys, and then if you can have the starting pitch you have and have a bullpen, because you've got the back end, like you feel great about Duran, if you can just fill in a little bit in between there, because we saw with the Dodgers last year, like you don't need to have an elite bullpen going into the playoffs. If you can have some guys you can move there, if you can put a Tyler Glass now there and get you big outs in the seventh inning or whatever it is, like if you can, I mean, in Yamamoto pitching the day after is a unique situation, but if you can have this kind of non-conventional bullpen, Jack, that can get outs. Like, I do think that's the formula for this team. Hit when it matters, great starting pitching, and a bullpen that can get just enough outs.
Well, yeah, and we've talked a lot about a guy that can take the ball in a game four, and while I still am there, and this is going to sound, this is one of the most disgusting things I've said in the history of the High Hopes podcast. What if I told you, and I did look it up, that in 11 of Aaron Nola's 16 starts.
Wait, you went in and out there. I lost you. Start over.
What if I told you that in 11 of his of Aaron Nola's 16 starts, he has allowed 3 earned runs or less?
I guess I'd buy it. I mean, 4 innings and 5 innings in some of those starts.
All 5 innings, every single start is.
Well, didn't he have 4 2/3, 3 runs, 1, I think, maybe?
So, I mean, once again, game 4 starter, Aaron Nola, just chugging along, going to give him the ball, and you hope and pray that he can get the job done. But, yeah, so all of a sudden it's like, can Aaron Nola give you 4?
Yeah.
Give him a ton of money so you don't have to go trade assets for another starting pitcher. Do you go and make the push your kind of chips in move for an Aroldis Chapman, who if you could go, you know, Chapman to Duran, and then you have like everyone else fill out after that, where it's like hopefully Keller comes back and looks like he did last year for the Cubs. Kirkering, I still believe in, but maybe not in a high leverage spot. Bolin, it's like just when I'm ready to get a Bolin
jersey. I hyped
him
up on the freaking morning show, and then it's like, great. Richie's like, oh yeah, that Bolin guy you were talking about didn't look great. I'm like, damn it.
He sucks.
Thanks.
Well, man. Kirkering was actually good, so who cares? But there's a case to be made for, again, there's a case to be made for all of it, and things can change, but is Aaron Nola, can he just give us 4 innings in a playoff start and then let the bullpen do their thing? And then you kind of go from there. I don't know. I mean, that's like an internal discussion down there, but at least he's not, you know, DFA worthy, which it felt like he was pitching in June. They wouldn't DFA him, but you get my point of just being so bad that how can you keep rolling him out there? He has not been.
Well, and they needed that with the way Painter pitched, obviously, because Painter had to get sent down. Like, one of those two guys had to give them something. And
Your bullpen piece.
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe. I will give Mattingly a lot of credit. It seems like he's found the right kind of role with Nola in the starts. It seems like he's looking at him as a 5-inning guy or less. And, you know, if you can get a little extra, great. But he doesn't have the same like built-in trust with Aaron Nola that Rob Thompson seemed to have. That's definitely a positive.
Well, yeah, I guess that's one of the benefits of having some fresh eyes around here.
Yeah, and don't have the same connection, the same like you know, you owe Nola for, you know, the organization owes him whatever. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. He's just like what it is. You know, you don't want him out there going through a lineup for the third time. And if you could just have him do that job for four or five innings, is what it is. It doesn't matter what you're paying him at this point. It's about getting the best version of Aaron Nola, and it certainly seems like that this is the best version of him.
Yeah, and I think it's the only one that is functional at the moment. But again, you know, if he's going to give you five innings and two or three runs, like, it's not perfect, but it's acceptable. And I do think it was smart to split up, no, because they had Painter and Nola and whoever would be the back-to-back for a while. Like, you talked about this. Split those guys up. Don't have the bullpen going back-to-back days. That seemed like such an easy fix that took them far longer than it should have to do it, Jack, but they got there.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. All right. But quickly, while we're on it, before we get back to the series and anything else that stood out, obviously we've hit on like the big stuff, but you just mentioned that, well, this is a month-long discussion, even a little over, because I think August 2nd or 3rd is the deadline this year. But
Third.
Okay. To the point you just made about pushing the chips in, and we're a month away, and there's baseball to be played and see how this shakes out. And look, we know injuries factor in, and it's a war of attrition, all that stuff. But like, where do you think they are philosophically as an organization? Because I think we know it's such a fascinating spot of, you know, Middleton lived through the decade of 2012 to 22 or 21, you know, whatever you want to say, and the lack of prospects and this and that. But, you know, it is a group that has been shooting for this thing, and they do have a real chance. Like, they are a contender to win the World Series, and there are clear fixes that you could say this would likely, if the player plays what we expect him to play as, like, make a major difference in our chances to win. Like, I think it's the most unique situation they've been in yet, with the age of the guys, how well they're playing, where they're at, going up against the lack of high-end talent who are ready, you know, close to major league ready in the minors to help, versus trading those chips and then kind of being a little more barren. It's a real like a tapestry of you know, things that it could go. What do you think, if a month out things could change, but right now, yeah, where do you think their head's at?
What's up? Yeah, they have no idea. I mean, that's exactly how I feel. I'm so torn, because as it stands right now, I'm still of the mindset of, like, go make the Harrison Bader trade again. But find the version of Harrison Bader for this year. Like, protect some of these guys and trade some of the back end pieces, because you have to do something. But it's still not push your chips in. But when they win two games like they just did, and you look around, the Braves are kind of faltering here. The Brewers, who I respect and love the Brewers, and I think that they are organization, like, they still have not gotten over the hump in the postseason, largely because they have not had the star players. Now, I think that Churio is having a great year, and Terang has developed into a star, and Contreras is a star. So they haven't had those bats in years past while they've had the starting pitching and the bullpen that they've had. So there's a Brewers like fear, but it's also like, I don't think the Brewers are. And, you know, Spike has said this, and he's right. It's not about building a team better than the Dodgers. You can't build a team better than the Dodgers at this trade deadline, but you could build a team that can beat the Dodgers. I mean, and again, I'm starting to use what Spike said, which is, but they beat the Celtics in a 7-game series. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's almost like there has to be pressure on them to say, you got to do it. Like, you got it. Because I think that their inclination would be, we're going to make some minor upgrades, but we're not going to go and turn over every leaf to win this thing, because we want to make sure that we have our future solidified. But as they keep playing this way, and the run they've been on since Mattingly, and looking at the I think if Middleton's sitting there around the trade deadline, and this team is 2.5 back of the Braves, or God forbid, tie with the Braves and chasing them down, I don't know how he's going to sit there and be like, trading, you know, Gage or Ramon or Obermueller. And it's going to be a really strenuous, tough time, because you're trying to balance both. You're trying to balance giving this core that is getting older, and these guys deserve every opportunity to go and get it done, and like really pushing them over the hump. And I just wonder if they, when push comes to shove, say, bleep it, let's go do it. And I do think that's on the table, especially with what is happening, what may happen next year with baseball. I love you. Just go do it. Just go do it. And even if they don't trade Gage, like one of the things with Gage could be there's one of your bullpen pieces. Like, I don't know. There's a lot. There's so much on the table heading into the next month and a half, or not even month and a half. It's pretty much a month at this point. It's so fascinating. And it'll keep you up at night, because on one day I'm like, don't do it. And the next day I'm like, you got to do it. So I don't know. It's a answer of, I have no idea.
Yeah, dude, I'm so with you. I originally, like a few weeks, or even like a week ago, I was like, nope, no, sir. And make a Harrison Bader trade. You want to add a little bit? That's fine, but we can't do this. And I'm flipping, man. And maybe it's just the height of these two wins, but I do think, you know, when I really step back and think about it, and look, the fact that, like, and I still believe in Andrew Painter's future and Aiden Miller's future and Justin Crawford's future, but, you know, it is a reminder that not all prospects work out. We know that. A lot don't. You know, the majority don't. And that this team really has a chance, and they are, like, situated in such a unique position with the ages of the players, and knowing that we've got really a 2 to 3 year window, I think, at most, with Harper playing great, Schwarber playing great, Wheeler, who knows if he'll even be here, all that. So, like, it is, it's honestly, I don't remember a more fascinating go all in or don't go all in because of all these factors we're talking about in my lifetime. I really don't. So I we're the fans talking about the team. Obviously we love them and we care so much and we watch all these games, and our hopes and dreams rest on how they do and all that. But Middleton and Dombrowski, those are the guys who are going to take the freaking, you know, heat from it if they're wrong, and are going to receive the glory if they're right. So, like, I can only imagine, Jack, like you said, I've been so back and forth on this. And, if you ask me today, this is the first day I think I'd be like, just do it. You know, just go for it. You know, who knows what's going to happen in the future with these guys? Like, let's win a freaking World Series. And then tomorrow I might be somewhere else. I can't imagine when you're playing for high-stakes poker like these guys are. That, you know, Jack, it must be weighing on him. It really must.
Yeah, man, I'm sure that Middleton, because we've heard him talk, what? He's been on WIP, I think, what, 3 times in the last 2 years?
Yep.
Or 3 times it's heading into the postseason. And he talks a lot about how he wants to be remembered and his legacy. And before spring training last year, talking about how, like, he wants his core to win not one, but multiple rings. Let's make sure we get one. Let's make sure we get one, for sure. And I think that he trusts Dave Dombrowski implicitly, but this could be one of those things where it's like, hey, Dave, and just like Dave in Boston, you know, Dave in Boston, his main objective and only goal that John Henry told him was go in the World Series at all costs. And we might be reaching that point. And we've said it a lot on this podcast, and I think we'll say it heading into the trade deadline, but if you believe in the people that are drafting and developing and what you're doing in the international market, you should be able to continue to, you know, churn out talent. Now, I say all this, Francisco Renteria is still untouchable, unless there's some unbelievable prospect out there or unbelievable player out there, but I don't know if it's going to happen. So, like, I love Gage Wood. But at the same time, there is real reliever risk with Gage Wood because he hasn't done it with the arm. Like, he's only thrown 40 innings and he's like on the shorter side. So maybe you view it as one of those things where you could probably send him to Boston for a Aroldis Chapman and Sonny Gray, or a Aroldis Chapman and, I guess obviously he's the main headliner, obviously take other pieces, but like a Aroldis Chapman, and if, God forbid, it would be a year and a half of Wilson Contreras at first base and Bryce in right field. He could headline those kind of deals. And you trust the people drafting that you can find other arms in the draft. But yeah, the one thing that we talk about, Dombrowski. Well, the guy that signs his checks is John Middleton. And John Middleton can give him direction of what he wants. And if you want them to go all in, it's going to be Middleton's call of, I know I've said we got to keep the window open, but I got to make sure that we get one of these things, and this might be our best chance to do it. And I think it's on John Middleton. I think it's on John Middleton to tell Dombrowski it's okay, you can trade the guys, and we are reaching that point with this core, which is crazy. But when you win two games like that, you start talking a little crazy.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think you're dead right. And also, when you're 4 and a half back from the Braves, like all of a sudden, it's like the division's real again. And I'm with you. I think you nailed it. I think this is going to be and should be a John Middleton decision. At the end of the day, Middleton's going to have to decide about the two things he's talked so much about how much the farm system matters to him, and he doesn't want to do the thing that the Phillies have always done and find themselves in this situation where they're barren because they went for it. But on the flip side, he is also, you know, going back to being on with Angelo years ago with like, I'm going to bring this trophy bag or die trying, you know, that whole thing. Like, he has long made it very clear that winning championships is his goal here, and he cares about it and cares about his legacy in the city and his legacy with the Phillies and all that. Like, we talk about Bryce, how much he cares, the same concept. So yeah, it's a fascinating thing. All right, one more thing before we get to the take bag, and you can touch any other things in the series you want there, but I want to know if you're on board with me. I said this on the morning show, and I was surprised how much pushback I got from Joe. But I feel pretty strongly about this. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And I know Mizorowski is a candidate. I get it. And I understand that he is the Cy Young winner today, and he has been the best pitcher in the National League. But for the All-Star game, because it is the All-Star game, let us remember, it is about stars. It is about, an exhibition game to honor the sport. And you know, people might not know, Jack, it is here in Philadelphia. And we've talked a lot about how Chris Sanchez should start because it's in Philly. And look, I would be great with that. And I think Sanchez has, you know, as good a case as Mizorowski. But I've thought about this a lot, and I think we were wrong. Zach Wheeler should start the All-Star game in Philadelphia. And I feel really strongly about it. Like, first and foremost, I know it's up like a month less, but Wheeler's numbers are just as good as Sanchez. I know his ERA is like a 1.80 to 2.11, but if you want to do it that way, I think Sanchez has like a 1.06 whip, and Wheeler has a 0.87 whip. Like, you could argue that in the, you know, 1 month less, obviously, but that Wheeler's been just as good as Christopher Sanchez. He doesn't have the streak, you know, and all that, but their numbers are really close. You know, a little bit better strikeout rate for Sanchez, whatever. But, like, you could make the argument, at least, Jack, that Wheeler is at the same level as Sanchez. And we're talking about starting the All-Star game. And Zach Wheeler has been so short-shrifted his whole career with honors. He's lost two Cy Youngs that he deserved, one of which he, like, clearly should have won that freaking Cy Young over Burns. Like, he should have. So, that. He's never started the All-Star game before. He's, you know, missed a couple years where he should have even been an All-Star. He talked about when he won the Gold Glove, I was like, I don't really win a lot of stuff. This means something to me. I think it would mean a lot to him. I think he has the you know, career and the stature to earn it. He should be an All-Star game starter at some point in his career. And again, the fact that it's here, like, I think they should start Sanchez or Wheeler regardless of anything else, because it's here for the moment, for the city, for the 250 of America of it all. Like, I think a Philly should start the game, but I really feel strongly Zach Wheeler should start the All-Star game. What do you think?
I like it. And I still think he should start game one. So, agreed. I'm with you. I was trying to think as you were going through that. It'd be kind of cool if they both went out to the mound at the same time. I don't know.
Like, it'd be awesome.
Like a first pitch thing, in a way. Like they both do it. I don't know. And I don't know how you properly pull it off. Yes, it's time for Mizorowski to take a little bit of a back seat. Like you got plenty of time, kid. You'll be all right.
Totally.
You'll get one. But yeah,
and it's here. It's a show. They're putting on an entertainment show to say baseball's cool. Like, in Philly, what's going to start the game off with more juice, more energy than having Wheeler on the hill or Mizorowski? Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. Oh, and then Rooster starts blaring before an All-Star game.
That's what I'm saying, like, dude. Right? Like, it really could be a special thing, I think.
Yeah, and I think Sanchez would get it. I think he would certainly get it. And again, like you said, it's not as if, you know, Zach Wheeler's pitched like a scrub this year. He's been ridiculous since coming back. So, and you're dead right about, I mean, by the way, it seems like we're going to have the fourth Philly since 2021 to finish second in Cy Young, like, which is crazy. Wheeler might even get in there too.
Yeah,
they might finish 2-3.
Yeah.
Finish 2-3.
He's got a 0.87 whip, man. He's been amazing.
I know. So I'm with you. I like
awesome.
The idea.
I'm really
happy.
I
like pushing for it. And Sanchez is great, but Wheeler deserves a moment. And we gotta We got to start honing in on the Zach Wheeler Hall of Fame case.
Yes, and maybe well, that's part of it too.
Could do it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I knew you'd be with me, but like I thought Joe would get it too. Felt like right up Joe's alley, and he was like, "No, it should be Sanchez." I was like, "All right, fine. I'm going to talk to someone who really gets it." So thank you.
Okay, that's
all right. Let's bag that's it up. Right.
All right, some take back stuff. By the way, again, great time at Garage Rittenhouse last night. I actually think that you asked tougher questions than I did.
Unbelievable. This is, people were just nailing your questions. I thought your Scott Kazmir one was kind of tough, but that guy was just like, Scott Kazmir. It's like,
Wow. Yeah, he was.
You know, well, that guy center. Said to me after, he's like, I think we were like six questions in. He's like, just so you know, I'm 6 for 6. I'm like, I am not surprised, my friend.
Yeah. He was locked in. Yeah, so I did, who did Utley hit the first home run off of in the World Series in game one? I did, who Roy Halladay's only walk in the no-hitter against the Reds was who, which is one of my favorite ones.
Yes.
And then who did the Phillies trade Mickey Moniak for the 22 trade deadline. So, yeah, I mean, I've heard the criticism from many about the toughness of those questions. And no.
You got a reputation to uphold, Jack.
Yeah, I know. Also, I will say I think that was one of our sharper Phillies mind crowds.
Dude,
you know what I mean?
Totally agree. Like, there were multiple people getting these questions. Like, there was like, damn, I had it too. It's like, okay, sorry guys. Normally, sometimes we'll ask a question, like, we'll just be sitting there and be like, does anyone want to guess? It's a really famous player. Take a guess.
Yeah. No, it was a very locked in Phillies crowd. A lot of sick Ohio Hopes people, which I always appreciate a lot. All right, so some other things that stuck out. I wouldn't mind sitting Schwarber today. They already split the series. He's had the back thing. I'm it's okay if he plays, but I certainly would not mind if you just sat Schwarber down and, hey, we're on to New York and let's go. By the way, we were at Garage, obviously. Did you see?
Oh, buddy, you talk about the Mets? I saw.
Second game? Six errors? Oh, my gosh.
I think first time since like 1960 or something that a team had had six infield errors in a game.
They're coming off a season from hell. Entering into like the worst season of all time,
and they're
crazy.
Spending like $800 billion for the team too. Would have thought. Yeah. Did you hear Gary Cohen's call? By the way,
no.
Treat yourself. At a certain point, like we played it twice on the morning show, and it was literally we were all just cackling at it. Like he's talking about them being in the depths of despair. Like it was phenomenal.
Did you see the video from the first game?
No. I only saw the second stuff.
Okay, well, the video from the first game is so funny. So all the Norwegian fans.
Oh, I did. I didn't realize that. Yes, hilarious. So good.
Hit the home run. I think it was the Dansby Grand Slam. And like the camera almost immediately pans to all the Norwegian fans just celebrating.
Having the time of their life. It's so good.
Yeah, man. Six errors. Six.
Can you imagine?
Oh, man. We've seen some bad defense here. That sounds atrocious. All right, so I thought, man, Jesus is such a tough one to get a grasp on.
13 strikeouts, 5 earned. It's like, what are we doing, man? It's so hard to figure it out.
Now, Trey, that was an error.
Yes, and I do think Bohm could have got at least knocked that ball down too. But the Trey one was way worse.
Well, my issue with the Bohm thing is, and this is, they were playing infield in because they're worried about a Nunez bunt, and I understand it's probably on the scouting report. It's probably one of those things where it's like, that just sucks that it happened. I was just flabbergasted that they were infield in with two outs.
Yeah, that's
like,
not behind the bag. I didn't think about that. It's a great point.
But I guess if it's on the scouting report that he loves to bunt with two outs and bases loaded or whatever, then I guess I understand it. But I was certainly surprised. Alan Rahnel can definitely be a solid 5. Like, that's about it. Obviously, you don't want him in a playoff start, anything like that. But from the standpoint of being a solid 5, I think he has evolved into knowing exactly who he is. And he's one of those guys where he just pitches up in the zone with both his fastball and his changeup. And, you know, they're on the same eye level. Because if he throws a fastball down, it gets blasted like Luis Garcia did. You know, if it's up in the zone, he can keep it up there and then tunnel the changeup off of it. Puts a really tough bind on hitters. And then off of that, if he can do that little 12-6 curveball that starts high and ends low, it does put the hitters into a bit of a predicament. So, again, he's nothing amazing. But like, again, I think he's a very, very solid five. I wonder if they're going to do the opener thing. I don't think they have to do an opener thing with them, given that it never works for them.
It's unbelievable. The opener always gives up runs every time.
It's shocking that it worked in the playoffs last year against the Dodgers. You know, that was the only time I feel like it's ever worked.
Well, but the opener was a starter, so it's a little different, you know? It's not some reliever opening. You go to a bulk guy. Like, it was Nola as the opener, you know?
Yeah. So I do think that Ron Hallow was serviceable, has always been serviceable, and, at least he's going to keep them in ball games where Andrew Painter was not. Sethi did not have a good outing two nights ago, but he kind of shoved last night again. Come on, Pittsburgh. We want that comp pick. You saw what Seth did last night, 100 miles an hour. Come on. That doesn't grow on trees anymore. So, but Seth Johnson certainly pretty okay last night. Pretty okay. Good to see Juwan Duran. That was his first save since June 13th.
Wow, was it really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Wow, it's been forever.
Crazy. Yeah, I knew he didn't work for like a week or whatever it was, but I didn't realize it'd been that long. That's crazy.
And just a simple 1-2-3 ninth inning from Juwan Duran. Just easy. Gets the job done. It's such a relief having that guy back there. And then back to Brandon Marsh for a second, because we have been monitoring this for a little bit now, but it does feel like he is starting to blossom into his real Johnny Damon prophecy.
Unbelievable, actually. I totally forgot about that, Jack. Wow. I'm going to give you a wow.
They're like the same
dude
player.
Yeah, it's what he's doing is Johnny Damon. He's doing a Johnny Damon thing.
Johnny Damon in his age, 28 season, was his first year in Boston. I mean, this is Marsh. 286, 356, 799 OPS. He had 14 home runs. Marsh will have more than that. Like, Damon had some power years where he hit 24 twice.
Did he get to 30 once?
He never hit 30. His high was 24. Yeah. His high was 24.
But that one Ellsbury year I was thinking of where he had 32.
You're thinking about Ellsbury.
Yeah, it's definitely what I'm thinking.
Him and Grady Sizemore, the two that, like, I loved Grady Sizemore.
Yeah, me too. You know Grady was my dude. I love that guy.
I know. He was the best. But, hit close to 300, 15 to 20 home runs, steals 20-plus bags, and play a damn good left field while also having unbelievable hair. I mean, he is truly, truly developing into Johnny Damon, which is a big development for this
team. It's a great, and look, one of the all-time winners of our lifetime. So that's a good one right there.
All right. So that's the Major League thing. I'm not going to do a Minor League Minute, although Cade Obermueller did shove.
Damn right.
And I did not get a chance to watch Gage last night in Reading yet because
we were at an event. You had a long ride home. I think people can forgive
you. Well, long night with the boys, too, with the sleep. So
no breaks when you got home.
I'm turning the alarm clock off. I need some rest. So I will be, I'll grind that over the weekend before Monday's Minor League Minute. But real quick, the MLB Draft Scouting Combine.
Ooh, all right, quickly, real quick, before you do that, let's because if you're going to do the most important part of the show, let me say to you, shout out to the Point Bar and Grill, because today's show is sponsored by Miller Lite and the Point Bar and Grill on Martini's Mill Road. The Point Bar and Grill is the best spot for Phil's games with Miller Lite buckets. For just $15, watch the game on Northeast biggest projector screens. Love that. While fueling up on their loaded Point Nachos, Miller Lights for Phil's win. Celebrate responsibly. Fritz, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so nothing crazy yet with the combine. Like, I don't have a million thoughts. I just have a couple thoughts. One of my guys, Rocco Maniscalco, who I was dying for the Phillies draft.
I saw you tweet about him.
Yeah, there's a 0% chance he's going to be a third.
That's too bad. Great name.
Great name, and because everyone looks at MLB.com and their prospect rankings, and it's like, oh, he's 54th. What do you mean? He is 17. He is a switch hitter. He's 97 in the infield, and it's butter at shortstop. There is a 0% chance that he is going to be there at 36. If he is, he will be a Philly.
Yep.
Archer Horn had a solid day. He's a solid all-around ball player. The one that is currently starting to really excite me, and I'm not sure he's going to be there, but I just want to put everyone on this radar of a guy named Tyler Spangler, who is a Stanford commit. I watched him in the Perfect Game All-American Classic last summer, and I thought he was the best player on the field. I thought he was left-handed Connor Griffin. He is Corey Seager 2.0. He was out all of this year with a back injury. He looked about as stiff as a board at the combine, which is a good thing. It looks like there's a chance he could be there at 36 and falling because of the back thing. And I know they'll probably be scared off because of Aiden, but him struggling in a way, like he did heat up in at the combine. Like, you want to talk about a superstar type talent being there at 36 and taking a chance on upside. We are monitoring the Tyler Spangler situation. The issue is he is a Stanford commit. It is tough to get kids away from Stanford. They're going to have to pay for it, but they have an extra fourth round with the some bonus pool money there so that they can put in early because of Ranger Suarez signing. So I am beginning to get very excited. I've been very excited about 36, but in watching the first two rounds the first couple of days of the combine, 36 are going to get a good player, and I think they have a chance to really float another solid player down to 64. So there will be more draft stuff. We don't need to go all the way through it, but the Tyler Spangler situation is very, very exciting.
Love it. Not Egon Spangler. Tyler.
Never heard of him.
Oh, yeah. Come on. It's one of the Ghostbusters, man.
I never saw it.
Oh, wow.
I know.
That's all right. I forgive you.
I know the song.
Who are you going to call? That's right. All right. Mets, obviously one more against the Nats tonight. Hopefully we can actually win this series. That'd be cool. Mets this weekend, 3 of 4, or excuse me, 2 of 3, we're happy with, or do we want to sweep them?
Yeah. We gotta rid ourselves of the demons of Citi Field.
Agree.
Just go up there and take care of
it. I almost forgot it because they've been so sad this year. I almost forgot about that ballpark and us. That is a little shiver. And yet, look, there's an interesting stretch for the Phils, too, because it's something like, I think 13 of 17 on the road or something that they're in the midst of. They've got the one series against Pittsburgh at home, but otherwise, like, because of July 4th and all that, they're on the road for a while. So if they can get through this stretch, you know, in good shape, you can really, you know, make a run here at the Braves, which is exciting. All right. Yep. Anything else, Fritzy?
I got nothing.
All right. We'll be back after the Mets series. Again, thank you to Garage Rittenhouse for having us, Miller Lite, Mueller for the whole thing. It was really an awesome time. We've had great events this year. We got another one coming up August 13th. I'll just throw that date out. It is my 15-year wedding anniversary, but it also might be a High Hopes night. So keep that date. We'll get you more info as it comes, and obviously a lot of fun stuff coming up. But again, thank you to everyone who came out last night. It really was an awesome, awesome event. We love you guys. And we'll be back after the Mets series. Until then, here's Ritz and Seltzer.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.